Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Inflation is hitting all of us this holiday season, and the financial picture for many households is looking bleak. Even so, consumers don't appear to have slowed down their spending during the season of giving. So how do you find the right balance between spending on loved ones, saving money, and not maxing out your credit cards? Joining me to talk about consumer spending habits for the holidays and how to avoid going into debt are University of Cincinnati Lindner College of Business Associate Professor and Director of the MS Finance Program, Michael Nugent. Welcome, Dr. Nugent.
Thank you, Lucy. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Game Time Budgeting LLC founder and president, Al Riddick. Thanks for being here, Al.
Thank you so much for having me, Lucy.
The University of Cincinnati is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. And are your holiday shopping bills starting to scare you? You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Mike, I want to start with you. Total household debt has risen to $16.51 trillion. That's trillion with a T in the U.S., and that's a 15% increase in credit card balances over the last year, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Yet consumers spent a record $9.12 billion shopping online during Black Friday, according to Adobe. What the heck is going on here?
Well, I think the challenge, Lucy, is the economy right now is not one direction. So, yes, we have an inflationary environment, but we also have a very strong labor market. And on top of that, then there's the fear of recession in 2023. So unlike a lot of economies in the past, there is no clear direction in this particular economy. The other piece is a lot of people believe there's a lot of pent-up demand and a lot of pent-up cash because of COVID. So because of the stimulus payments and because of the lack of ability for people for the last 2 years to, whether it's go out, buy things, that is a lot of pent-up demand within the economy that consumers have actually underspent in the last 2 years. And now it's kind of like, okay, I can go party now because now everything is open.
So, but the current savings rate is now around 2%. Before the pandemic, consumers were saving 8% to 9% of their income. What do you think's going on with that, Mike? Is this all because of inflation and things are costing so much more?
Well, the irony with inflation is that with certain class of goods, meaning consumer staples, the things we have to have like Tide, you actually want to buy more in an inflationary environment because if you wait a year, it's going to be 10% more expensive a year from now. The discretionary side, the things we don't have to have, like a new car, people you tend to put off more in this environment. Like I remember the beginning of COVID, you see people walking out of Costco with shopping carts of just toilet paper.
Yeah.
So we have a little bit of that with the consumer staples side.
So, Al, I want to talk to you. Credit card spending, as I mentioned, is on the rise. I know you have a great track record with not getting into debt and getting out of debt and not spending on credit cards. How can people start to change that pattern if they're just used to whipping out that card and getting what they want on credit?
So to me, I always say you have to ask yourself a couple of questions. First of all, what behaviors can I modify today that could help me save more money, right? So when it comes to spending on credit cards, of course, I look at it as fake income, right? So, and a lot of people, unfortunately, use credit cards to supplement their income. But when you're in this spending pattern or behavior, if you aren't getting the results that you desire, at some point you have to say, what could I be doing better, right? So with the whole credit card spending, I always say, first of all, if you don't even have the cash to pay off the bill in full at the end of every month, that is a signal that you're doing something wrong. So even though people don't like to save, at some point in your life, Lucy, you have to realize something will occur that you don't expect that's going to cost you money. So if you don't have the money in the bank, where's the money going to come from? So a lot of people might choose to use a credit card, but I always say you do have to have some type of emergency fund, right? So let's see if we can get ourselves into the habit of maybe putting $25, $50, or $60 from every check into a savings account, because you will eventually need that money to pay for some unexpected event that you didn't think was going to occur.
Well, and Al, I mentioned that you have a personal history with getting out of debt. You and I go back a few years, so I know that story. But can you tell our listeners a little bit about kind of your own journey with debt and saving and all that good stuff?
Yes, ma'am. So there was a time in my life where my wife and I had about $150,000 in debt. So, of course, I'm talking student loans, credit card debt, auto loans as well, and even the mortgage. So my wife and I, now this is not sexy, Lucy, but but we started having a monthly budget meeting so that we could get better control over our finances. So then we just made the decision that we wanted to become debt-free because to us, we wanted to buy our lives back. So we put together a plan and we basically gave every dollar of income coming into our home an assignment because at the end of the day, you can't really, how can I say it? You have to give your money purpose, direction, and an assignment. So we started with, I believe it was the credit card debt first, and then the car, student loans, and then we paid off the house as well. And it's funny that you mentioned that, Lucy, because on December 15th, my wife and I will actually celebrate 15 years of debt-free living.
Wow. Now, Mike, I understand you feel like, though, there is kind of some good debt and bad debt. Talk to us about your thoughts on that.
I think from a debt's perspective, debt is neither good or bad. It's how we use it. It can be used for very appropriate purposes. So an example would be I bought a car a year ago and the dealer came up and said, do you want to finance the car? And I said, well, what's the interest rate? And the interest rate was 1.9%. I said, I'll finance every penny you'll give me. The reason being I could take that same money and invest it in an AT&T stock and make a 6% dividend. So by financing the car, by utilizing debt in a more productive manner, I was actually able to make a 4% return in that money without anything out of my pocket other than the investment. I think to Al's point, if I had spent that money instead of investing it, that would have been a very bad decision. Because even though I was paying a low interest rate, it was still a cost to that. I also would say, though, on the flip side, I think we've all had that challenge sometimes, is we all of a sudden run up credit card debt and you look at it, I'm paying 20% for something that I bought. So the thing that I bought was $100, but now it became $120 because of the interest rates on top of it. So debt used appropriately can be a very powerful tool. Used inappropriately can be a very dangerous tool.
So Mike, with the let's talk inappropriate debt, because sure. I think that's what most of us do. Most of us most of us aren't savvy enough to do that math you did with the stock and the interest rate on the car. What are the risks for the economy as a whole when those patterns don't change, when people keep spending on credit cards and keep running up debt and keep buying things they really can't afford?
Well, at some point, you run the risk from an economic perspective of it has a negative impact on the economy because you have short-term spending. But at some point, you're going to have an increase in bankruptcies, an increase in foreclosures, an increase in repossessions of cars. So the long-term benefit could actually be very negative because while the company may benefit in the short term, GM sells more cars, Nordstrom sells more shoes, in the long term, that negative impact is going to decrease consumer spending, not increase consumer spending. It also regrettably has a significant impact on the employment market. One of the key things now that employers look at is your credit card score when they hire you. And all it takes is a bankruptcy in there. So, for example, I, before coming to UC, was at Morgan Stanley. One of the questions they ask you right up front, have you had a bankruptcy in the last 10 years? Hmm. If I had, I would never have been hired.
Wow. Al, I think there are people who listen to this and think, oh, well, if you're making a really great salary, if you got a lot of money, that makes it a little bit easier to save as long as you don't have a house payment you can't afford and all those kind of basics. How can people with fewer resources save more and build up a better financial foundation for their lives?
So one of the things that I would recommend, even if you are on a limited income, so to speak, just to teach yourself the habit of saving. So let's just throw out a number. Let's just say you're bringing home, I don't know, $3,000 a month, right? Can you convince yourself to maybe save $100 or $200? And if so, how would you feel if you are able to do that? Because most of us, everything we do is based on how we feel at the end of the day. You know what I mean? But most people find it so difficult saving because they've never actually tracked where their money is going in the first place. So to me, in order to tell your money where to go in the future, you need to understand where it went in the past. And one quick activity that most people can do, I dare people to do this, as a matter of fact, just look at like your checking account statement or your credit card statement or what have you. And just go down line by line to see where is your money really going. What most people will find is that they spend a lot of money eating out and they have a lot of what I call death by subscription going on. So these are just opportunities for you to curb your spending appetite and to start saving money. Because again, when you think about it, once money is in your hand, you do have 100% control over how much you save.
We're talking holiday spending and how to avoid debt with University of Cincinnati Lindner College of Business Associate Professor and Director of the MS Finance Program, Michael Nugent, and Game Time Budgeting LLC Founder and President Al Riddick. How's your holiday budget holding up? You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wbxu.org. Mike, how are today's economic pressures affecting different economic groups based on what households earn? You hear a lot about how folks making $100,000 or more a year are feeling it very differently from folks making less than $50,000 a year.
Well, I think that's always been the case. So there's a lot of data that shows that the higher income levels are really not as impacted on a day-to-day change in the economy. If you look at luxury goods, so there's a friend of mine sent me an article about Rolex watches. You can't find one. The waiting list in some places is up to 2 years for a Rolex watch.
I am not on that waiting list.
I'm not either. And it was kind of surprising because that level, that part of the economy that is very untouched and typically is relatively untouched. On the other hand, because they have a lot of discretionary income. On the other hand, to Al's point, when you're making... when you're taking home $3,000 a month, $100 is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love Al's idea, pay yourself first. Because if you can pay yourself first, that and the compounding of that, you know, if you put away $100 a month, what you'll be amazed at if you run the numbers and if you get a small return, what that money's going to be worth 40, 50 years from now. But I think that because there's so much, discretionary income on people who make under $100,000, they don't really have the ability to manage the fluctuations in the economy like someone who's making substantially more than that.
Mm. And what do you think, Al? I mean, you know, I've done a lot of reporting on low-income people and how they end up spending more for things. You know, they can't buy 6,500, you know, rolls of paper towels in bulk to save or per unit and that sort of thing. So what are some of the... you mentioned saving $100 a month or something. What are some of the other steps people can save can follow to really watch those pennies and try to make that savings add up?
So one of the things that my wife and I, we do this right now. Again, it's not sexy, yeah. Lucy, but we actually track where every dollar of income goes. You know, I use the software program where I could dial into my bank every week. I typically do it on Friday evenings, and I see where all of the money is going. But for individuals that are really trying to just to save money and just be more, can I say, more of a good financial steward, so to speak. I'm big into coupons and things of that nature. So, of course, that's an opportunity. Now that we're in the holiday season, I always say you don't really have to spend a lot of money to make someone happy. What if you made someone a gift? You know, what if you, I don't know, maybe you're into poetry, Lucy. What if I wrote you a poem? You know what I mean? What if I cooked you dinner? What if I gave you a coupon for like free lawn care or babysitting or something like that? You don't always have to spend money. And I'm actually thinking of a gift that I gave my wife 1 year. I actually wrote her a song, Lucy. One of my buddies has a studio in his house. So I was like, dude, I need some a musical accompaniment. So I sang a song and recorded it for my wife. It didn't cost me anything, but that is like one of the best gifts she told me she has ever received.
That's thinking. Are holidays, Mike, an especially dangerous time for people when it comes to running up debt?
Without question, for any number of reasons. Part of it, there's a lot of emotional spending. Secondly, I think to Al's point, there's we have this culture of giving gifts, and the more is better. The other thing, there's a very unusual dynamic that tends to happen more during the holidays. Everything's on sale. So we have a strong mentality because it's on sale. It's a good idea for us to buy it. And so I think one of the pieces we have to be very conscious of is there's a dramatic difference between need and want. And it seems like when something's on sale, we all of a sudden need it when we actually just want it. Mm-hmm. And so the dynamics are even more, I think, in our face today with the holidays because everything is on sale.
Yeah. I refer to that as shopping math. Look, yes. I spent this, but I saved 60%.
Right, but you saved 60% on something you didn't need.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's the downside. Al, you talked a little bit before about cash. How important is it to just start running your life on a cash basis, just paying with cash, maybe not having a credit card, maybe cutting up a credit card, or maybe having one stashed away somewhere for a terrible emergency? How important is that?
So I hear that question a lot for individuals that have a bad habit of always swiping when they might not have money. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways you can kind of curb your appetite for spending is to go to a cash system. Because when you physically see cash leaving your possession and going into someone else's pockets, it really hurts you. You know what I mean? So that's one quick way that you can do that, because once you are paying more attention to where your money is going, what you're really trying to do is wean yourself off of always swiping or tapping or what have you, because that is what made you go down that road of bad behavior in the first place. So if you can convince yourself to go to cash, because it will help you become more aware, first of all, of where you're spending money. I've seen people do this. You can eventually start to create a new behavior where you're paying more attention to where your money is going and actually saving more as well.
Is that getting trickier? Because I feel like there are businesses that are going cashless. You know, I mean, some restaurants, some places are just saying, we're not doing cash anymore.
So for businesses that don't do cash, obviously you could use a debit card, right? I always say if you're having trouble with credit card debt, I would make that my last option anytime I'm spending money, because at the moment you tap or swipe that card, you don't really feel the impact of money leaving your possession, so to speak.
Yeah, maybe I need like a little shock that I did. Some kind of Pavlovian something happens to me when I use my credit card. Mike, what I guess I'm wondering, you know, there could be people listening out there who think, oh my gosh, I've already spent way too much on the holidays. I still have some people to buy for. Is it ever too late to kind of turn things around if people feel like they've kind of gotten into this financial hole? Give us some hope for kind of.
It's never too late. I think we probably all at some point in our lives have gotten into that hole. I've gotten there. I got out of it. It's not easy. But I think to Al's point, it takes the will. And it's the understanding that very few of the economic or financial vehicles we have available to us are good or bad. It's how we use them. And we can use credit cards effectively. Like, I pay cash for nothing. Now, I pay it off every month, but the reason I pay cash for nothing is I get cash back on everything I buy on my credit card. So it actually saves me money. So credit cards are like any other financial instrument. They're not good or bad. It's how we use them. And so we always have that opportunity to turn things around. There's ways you can refinance credit card debt and therefore reduce your interest payment. So those opportunities are there.
Yeah. What do you think, Al? If there's somebody who's feeling really bad right now and feeling mopey about what the holidays and how much they've spent, what would be your number one dose of hope that you can give?
So my number one dose of hope is that every day you wake up, you have a new opportunity, right? So I always say spend more time planning what to do with the next dollar you will earn before spending the dollar you already have. And if you can remember that one thing, it should start to impact your behaviors with money and hopefully allow you to create new financial outcomes.
Yeah. Maybe you can have a Friday night date night like at the Riddick household, where you're looking at the bank statements and figuring out where all that money goes, huh?
Oh, that is funny.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Lindner College of Business Associate Professor and Director of the MS Finance Program, Michael Nugent, and Game Time Budgeting LLC Founder and President, Al Riddick. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening. You can find archives of our program on WVXU.org. Thanks for listening, and I hope you tune in tomorrow.